Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to introduce Meg Whitman. She knows a thing or two about the power of the Internet to turn a small and simple idea into something global and transformative. When Pierre Omidyar brought Meg in to help him build a business around his online auction site in 1998, eBay had 30 employees, $4 million in annual revenues, and 300,000 registered users. When Meg left 10 years later, eBay had 15,000 employees, almost $8 billion in revenues, and nearly 300 million registered users. I'm told that some of the principles that Meg emphasized at eBay would apply to the Khan Academy as well. For example, she observed that the eBay model was ideal for internet success because it combines capacity for enormous volume with very low overhead. Adding users increases market share without increasing costs. Second, a big part of Meg's success at eBay was due to her extraordinary focus on customer happiness. Not just satisfaction, but happiness. She recognized early on that in the new and often impersonal world of online learning and earning the consumer's trust was crucial to sustain success. And finally, she reciprocated this sense of trust to the consumer. Meg said that her vision at eBay was to set a number of very simple rules and then get out of the way and trust users and consumers to know what works best for themselves rather than telling them what to buy and sell. The results were astonishing. There are now over 1.3 million people who make some or all of their living on eBay. Of course, there's far more to Meg Whitman than eBay. Before she joined eBay, she had a string of several corporate successes. And she followed that with a near-miss run for the governorship of California before her most recent coup, being named CEO of Hewlett-Packard. And any casual reader of the business news knows how very busy she is right now. So we are really indebted to her for being with us this evening. She did all that while raising two sons and volunteering her insight and leadership to presidential campaigns and to educational innovators like Teach for America, where she serves on the board of directors. Fortune magazine called Meg Whitman the most powerful woman in business. The Weekly Standard dubbed her the most interesting woman in American politics. And Time has ranked her as one of the most influential people in the world. Join me in welcoming Meg Whitman.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, it gives me great pleasure to introduce the special guest of the evening, Sal Khan. And I have a great affinity towards entrepreneurs, whether educational entrepreneurs or business entrepreneurs, because I had a chance to work for one of the great ones, and that was Pierre Omidyar, who was 29 years old when I joined eBay. And, you know, entrepreneurs have a very special gift, and I'll tell you one little funny story. So I got a call from a headhunter to think about being the CEO of eBay. I said, no, you know, I don't really know about the Internet. This seems far-fetched. And Pierre said, well, at least come out and meet me and my co-founder, Jeff Skoll, who you may know is now head of Participant Productions, which has been a remarkable success. So I came out, and I was worried because it was a tiny little company. And I came out, and I showed up at the headquarters, and there was a receptionist. And I remember thinking, oh, good, this is a big enough company to have a receptionist. Interviewed, got the job, started in January of 1998. And my first day on the job, I walked in and there was no receptionist. The desk was gone. The picture behind her was gone. And I walked in and sat it down in my cubicle next to Pierre. And I looked over at Pierre and I said, "Hey, so happy to be here. You know, this is going to be very exciting. I'm delighted to be working with you. Hey, by the way, what happened to the receptionist?" And he looked at me with a little grin and he said, "Oh, we hired her for the day." Because we were pretty sure that you wouldn't think we were a big enough company for you to come work for unless we had a receptionist. So you know what I love about entrepreneurs? They always find a way to get things done. And that epitomizes Sal Khan. What started as a way of tutoring his cousin from a distance has turned into a world-changing project that is upending the way people learn and the way we currently even think about education. Sal is an MIT and Harvard-educated hedge fund manager who created online videos for his cousin to tutor them through math and science. And when friends and relatives took to Khan's friendly, accessible YouTube videos that explain school subjects, the Khan Academy was born. With over 2,200 tutorials, all done by Sal, 100,000 people viewing his lessons each day, Harvard Business Review recently stated that Khan's innovative approach to teaching will successfully educate more people in math and science over the next decade than Harvard has over its entire history. Please welcome Sal Khan.
Thanks. No, I'm so excited to be here. So how many of y'all are at least have been to the site or are a little bit familiar with Khan? Oh, good. Okay. Very good. So what I want to do is, as Meg introduced, Khan Academy started off, or at least it became most known for this collection of videos. Now it's 2,800 videos. I did a couple this morning. It's most known for the videos. So I want to show you a little montage of what the videos are like, and then we'll talk about what else we're up to, because, we really think that the videos are just the tip of the iceberg and that there's actually a lot more to do.
We could integrate over the surface, and the notation usually is a capital sigma. All of these interactions are just through the gravity over interstellar, or almost you could call it intergalactic. So the right slot is I plus 1. This animal's fossils are only found in this area of South America, a nice clean band here. They create the Committee of Public Safety, which sounds like a very nice committee. Notice this is an aldehyde. And it's an alcohol.
It's some type of an infectious disease.
Exactly. So the key is when you start to look at data, you have to look at all aspects of it.
Ours is there, $30 million, plus the $20 million from the American manufacturer. If this does not blow your mind, then you have no emotion.
I'll go a little bit more into the detail of how all of this got started. And it really has been this organic, almost happenstance process. But just kind of an update on what we've been up to, and just to give it's been a kind of a wild ride for me, because literally a year ago it was a one-person operation. We're now 20 people, so we've been ramping up quickly. But we've passed over 80 million lessons delivered. 100 million exercises have been done. Over a million a day are being done by students around the world, and I'll show you what it means to do an exercise on the Khan Academy. This is what's exciting for us. I mean, our usage has been growing 3 to 5-fold per year, but we've had 3.5 million unique users this past month. And, there's the quote from the Harvard Business Review, and, we just did a little simple arithmetic. We're like, in the internet world, you're so used to a million here, a million there. You kind of get numb to the number. But that's more than 6 times the number of students who have been to Harvard in its history in last month. This, as mentioned, kind of all started a little bit by luck or happenstance. It was 2004. A newly married cousin's visiting me from New Orleans in Boston. And one cousin in particular, it turned out that she was having difficulty with math. And she was this really bright student, really fun to engage in. And I told her, "Nadia, I have trouble believing this is the case. You're obviously bright. You're obviously hardworking. We share a certain amount of DNA with each other. Well, how about when you go back to New Orleans, we do some type of tutoring session? And so she agreed, and this was literally fall of 2004. She went back to New Orleans. We got on speakerphone. Every day after work, I would call her up, or she would call me after school, and we would use Yahoo Doodle as a kind of a shared whiteboard. And it worked out. A couple of months later, she was able to ramp up in mathematics and place into the right class. Then I started tutoring her brothers, a couple of other cousins here and there. And actually, I started writing some software, some primitive software for them very early on back then. But by 2006, I had about 15 cousins and family friends around the country that I was doing this thing with, and I still had my day job. So I remember it was November of 2006. I was at dinner, and by this time, the firm I was working for, we had moved out to Palo Alto, and so I was having dinner with a buddy in Palo Alto, and I was showing this little software that I was working on for my cousins, and telling him what I was doing. But I said, my one frustration is it's getting hard to scale. Even with 15 cousins around the country, it's hard to do this. And he said, well, you know, well, why don't you make some videos and put them up on YouTube? And I said, no. YouTube's for cats playing piano. It's not for serious mathematics. I went home that weekend and I got over the idea that it wasn't my idea. I decided to give it a shot. And, you know, you can literally see those first videos and, you know, don't use them. They're very rough. They were up there, but I left them up. They're really just almost for historical record. You can sort on YouTube by date uploaded. And, I told my cousins, I was like, hey, you know, why don't you take a look at these, see what you think? And their initial feedback was slightly backhanded, but profound. They said that they preferred me on YouTube than in person. It is counterintuitive that someone would prefer an automated version of their cousin to their cousin. But it actually makes a lot of sense when you put yourself in their shoes. Now they could pause and repeat their cousin. They could watch something as many times as they needed without feeling judged. They could, you know, when I had sessions with Nadia, sometimes I'd say, hey, do you get this concept? I kind of had a feeling that maybe she didn't quite understand exponents, but she was embarrassed because she was supposed to learn it last year. And she's like, oh, yeah, I got it. Now she doesn't have to feel like she's going to get judged. She could go back and watch that concept. So I just kept making videos, and then they were on YouTube, and other people started watching it. And at first, you know, they were just very simple comments, like thank you. And you know, I don't know if you've seen the other comments on YouTube, but there aren't a lot of thank yous. It's and they're not quite G-rated most of the time either. But just that was a pretty powerful idea. And then I started getting comments from students, hey, this helped me pass my algebra exam, or this gives me the confidence to go and become a physics major, an engineering major in college. So I was excited. You know, here I was, you know, taking a shower or shaving or hanging out with friends, and my videos were able to teach people around the world and at least kind of maybe affect their lives in these small ways. But then, you know, now a few months into it, then I started to get a few letters that were above and beyond just small ways. And, you know, this is one letter in particular that early on kind of changed my thinking about what this could be. And I really encourage, just put yourselves in my frame of mind getting a letter like this, just putting these videos up on YouTube. By this point, there were about 100 videos, mainly in algebra, pre-algebra. Hello, Sal. My 12-year-old son, Ethan, has autism and has had a terrible time with math. We have tried everything, viewed everything, bought everything, and bought is in caps. Well, we stumbled across your video on decimals and it got through. Then we went on to dreaded fractions. Again, he got it. We couldn't believe it. He was so excited. It is your soothing voice and calm manner, coupled with an easygoing explanation and examples. I can't thank you enough. And then they say, you know, this, I'm shortening, and then it says, you know, you are their magic math teacher. I've shown this to everyone I know who are in similar situation to my own. There are so many of us. Thank you so much, and God bless you, Allison Petrosia. So, I mean, you know, I was an analyst at a hedge fund. I wasn't used to people saying God bless you. I wasn't. It's kind of, you know, changed my value system a little bit. But the site kept growing, and by 2009, I frankly just had trouble focusing on my day job. The site just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And then I had been through several iterations of this before when I had a bad day of work. I was like, I'm going to quit. I'm going to do Khan Academy full time. But finally, my wife and I sat down and was like, okay, you know, I think we have enough savings that I could take a year off and see if hopefully someone realizes that there's a good social return on investment here. I'd set it up as a not-for-profit a few years before that. So I quit the job in 2009, hoping someone would eventually notice. And like I think a lot of these stories go, after about 9 months, no one had noticed. And I started updating my resume and, you know, all whatever else that entails. And some people had asked to put a little PayPal link so that they could donate, and I was getting $10, $20, $30 donations from around the world, and that was powerful. I mean, poor college students were donating $15 just out of goodwill. But then all of a sudden I got a $10,000 donation one day. And I looked at who it was. It was someone named Ann Doerr. I had never met her before. So I sent her an email and I said, thank you. This was the largest donation I've ever gotten. If we were a physical school, you would now have a building named after you. You would, which is a very good deal, I hear, because I don't know what it goes for in other places. So she was based in Palo Alto as well. Our firm had moved to Palo Alto at this point. And we met, and over lunch, she said, well, what's your vision? I said, a school for the world that, you know, not just videos, exercises, software. And then she said, well, if this was the largest donation, how are you supporting yourself? And I was, I'm not. It was as much pride and anyway the so she kind of nodded I was just so grateful that she'd really stepped up and done that and then I drove home and I got a text message from Ann saying I've just wired $100,000 to you. You're supporting yourself now. So that was a good day. And then it gets started. I mean, this was literally just slightly over a year ago. So this is all very recent. Then a whole series of events started happening. I was running a little summer camp, a little 1 week summer camp in the Bay Area for kids just to kind of experiment with some of my ideas. And I had this one game where six kids were playing a game of Risk, and I had the other 20 kids trading securities based on the outcome of the game of Risk. And it's a very good game. And I got a text message, you know, it was literally a trading floor of like seventh graders. And the text message was from Ann, and she said, I'm at the Aspen Ideas Festival, and Bill Gates is in front of an audience on stage in front of hundreds of people, and he's talking about you right now. And I was like, I didn't know Ann was such a prankster. I didn't know this was, you know, I thought she had sent it to the wrong person or whatever. So I went online and I started, people are tweeting about it and things like that. And I was like, this is real, and as surreal as it was. And so I kind of went home that day, and I was like, what do I do now? Do I call him? So the next few days were a little unusual, strange for me. And then I finally got a call about a week or two later from Larry Cohen, who's Bill Gates' chief of staff, saying, you might have heard, Bill's a fan. He would like to meet you if you have time. I was staring at my calendar as we were talking, and it was completely blank. And I was like, yeah, I think, you know, maybe like Wednesday 2:45, I could just sneak him in there. I have, you know, a dentist appointment, some laundry to do. So we met and he decided to support us. And actually simultaneously, and this was all, you know, it's amazing how these things just start happening. Some folks at Google invited me over. You know, I'm in Mountain View, they were in Mountain View. I joked, you know, two major institutions in Mountain View. And they said, what would you do at $2 million? And I said, is this an open question or is this related? They clarified it, and I told them the same thing. I would build a virtual school, hire a software team, translate the content, et cetera, et cetera. And so by literally exactly about a year ago, both the Gates Foundation and Google were our first major sponsors to get this off and running, to get the office space, to build that initial team. And so we started building it. And so what we've been building is the videos are there. I keep making videos. I literally have made videos this morning. But part of the Google funding is to translate the videos into 10 plus languages now. There's been a few languages above and beyond that, and we're already made a lot of headway. And actually, Intel has helped us a lot with doing Spanish and Portuguese. But most of our focus is on the software, which the videos complement. So this is what we call our knowledge map. The top node, each of these are a concept. The top node is basic addition. So you're literally 1 plus 1, 2 plus 3. And the idea is to master a concept and then move on to each successive each concept after that. And it's a very simple idea. It's actually how you would learn anything. It's how you'd go in a video game. Only when you master level 1, you go to level 2. But it's important to realize it's completely the opposite of what's happening right now in our traditional school system. Right now what we do is we fix the amount of time someone has to learn something. And the variable is how well they actually learn the concept. And so you have this reality is we're learning systems of equations. We have, for 2 weeks, we have an exam. Some of us get A's, some of us get B's, some of us get 80%, 70%. And even though some people might have failed that exam, we move on to the next concept. And that next concept is building on top of that. It's like if you were building a house and you get the inspector in and looks at the foundation and said, this foundation's only 70% sound. And you're like, well, that's passing. I'm going to build the first floor now. And that's exactly what's happening. And so we said, let's do the opposite. Instead of making the amount of time you're working on something fixed and how well you know it is the variable, let's set how well you know it as the fixed thing, that everyone should master it. Everyone should essentially have 100% understanding, and the variable is how long and when you have to actually master that concept. And so that's what we're trying to do right here. And so this is what one of those modules looks like, and they're actually an infinite number of problems. So they're actually problem generators, and actually we're doing this part of it as an open source project. And this was actually contributed by a salesman in Washington, D.C., who we're trying to recruit now as our lead, because it's a brilliant module to explain the intuition behind what a derivative is. And what we're doing is we're building modules that cover all the way from basic addition, all the way through calculus, and then through physics, accounting, computer science, on and on and on. The videos already cover a lot of this, but we want someone to be able to practice and get feedback on all of this stuff. And the videos are there if you need help. You get the steps of any problem. This is what another one of the modules looks like. This is what a more basic one. But once again, if a student gets stuck, they get to see the steps and they know exactly where they got stuck on it. But it's trying to ensure mastery. 70%, 80%, even 95% isn't good enough. What was that 5% that student didn't understand? Maybe it was something important that's gonna show up later in their careers. So we started this off literally about a year ago. And when we started, a local school district, Los Altos School District, said, oh, we heard you're doing interesting stuff. We'd like to meet with you. When we met, they said, what would you do if you could do anything you wanted with a classroom? And by this time, I had hired the smartest guy I knew in college, this guy Shantanu, and we went into the meeting and we said, well, we would have every student work at their own pace, at their own time, videos, exercises, whatever they need. We would give teachers as much data as possible. And instead of the teacher giving these kind of one-pace, one-size-fits-all lectures, we'd have them doing direct interventions with the students. Or even better, getting the students to actually mentor each other. So we would use technologies to actually make the classroom more interactive, make it more engaging, not less engaging. And so they kind of nodded, and Shantanu and I kind of went out of the parking lot and were like, oh, they're very nice people, but there's no way they're going to do this. This is kind of a radical thing. But I think it is something special about maybe what was happening in Silicon Valley generally, but 2 days later, there's like, can we start in 2 weeks? Right after Thanksgiving, and so Sean was like, we better hire more people. So we brought a line, and so this is actually a dashboard of one of those Los Altos pilots from a couple of months ago. And this is what a teacher sees literally in real time when they're walking around the room. Each row here is one of the students. I blanked it off for privacy. Each column here is one of those concepts that you saw on the knowledge map. And the paradigm is green means that the student has already mastered that concept. Blue means they're working on it, but everything's fine. Red means they're working on it, but they seem to be stuck. They've watched the video, they've done a hint, they've done a bunch of problems, but they're still not able to get that level of mastery. And so the model has kind of emerged, and we've been working with the schools to really understand what is the best model is the teacher can then go straight to that student and do a one-on-one intervention, or even better, get one of those other students who've already mastered the concept to maybe be the first line of attack. And you know, the way we think about it is, you know, there's this focus on student-to-teacher ratio, which is an important metric in the classroom. But we say what's even more important than that is student-to-valuable time with the teacher ratio. So in a traditional model, teachers lecturing, grading homework, doing disciplining most of the time, maybe 5-10% of their time is actually sitting next to students, forming connections with them. Now 100% of their time is. So we think it's actually a factor of 5 or 10 of actually increasing the humanity in the classroom, not to mention the interactions between students. So this is some of the other data that we give the teachers, and the students have get the data on themselves, and it's been a really powerful to see how the students have taken control of their learning. They're setting goals, and these are ideas that the teachers have set up, where students are setting up goals, or seeing how well they achieve those goals week by week. This tells the teacher what a student's been working on for the last month, and there's different time periods. This tells the teacher what they've been focused on. Inner circle is videos. Outer circle is exercises. They can click on any of those and drill deeper. Each of those bars is a problem that the student did. Blue is right. Red is wrong. Height is how long it took them. Teacher can see what hints they used, when they watched the videos. And actually, we have it now that they can click on this and they can actually see the narrative of how the student interacted with that problem. What choices did they pick before or later? This right here is another dashboard that we give teachers, and it really just allows a teacher to track every student in their class, because they're all working at their own pace now. But it tells a kind of a powerful narrative. So the horizontal axis over here is days working on the site. The vertical axis is the number of modules completed, which is one way of gauging how well the kids are advancing. And what we see in class after class, and this has been eye-opening for us as well, is you see a group of kids who race ahead in that each class, you know, the first few days, there's a group of kids who are in the middle, and there's a group of kids who fall behind. And we've all seen it in traditional models. Okay, those are the advanced kids, those are the gifted kids, they're going to be engineers and doctors and scientists. And these kids are not. These kids are remedial kids. Maybe we should even track them once you get into 6th, 7th, 8th grade. We do track them, and we separate them away. But what we see when you let every student work at their own pace, and this blue student is one of them, day 10, he was below average. But because he was able to completely fill in all those gaps, probably those gaps that were being left behind by that traditional model where everyone moves in lockstep, he was able to fill those gaps, spend a lot of time on one concept in particular, and that concept was negative numbers. After he did that, about 60, actually not even 40 days later, he was the second best student in the class. And over and over and over again, we're seeing this thing happen where we're like, who's this student? Where did she show up from? And you look at the data, and they're the second, third best student in the class right now. 6 weeks ago, they were the second or third worst student in the class. And so over and over again, we realize that this whole idea of at early stages, snapshot exam, and then judging people may be not the best way to filter our kids out. Now the one thing that, you know, whenever you talk about computer-based learning or blended learning, which is kind of a buzzword now, people imagine, it's going to turn it into like a factory, or it's going to be like a Borg or Vulcan reality where, you know, kids are just doing problems all the time and there's not any interaction. And the one thing that we emphasize is, no, it's the opposite. The technology is enabling interaction because you have time with the teacher, because you have peer-to-peer interaction, and it frees up class time to do what the teacher always wanted to do, projects, other things, engineering, whatever else they might want to do. And to give a sense of the energy level, this is a little news report on the Los Altos pilot. It doesn't capture some of the peer-to-peer, but it captures the energy level quite well.
From Mountain View, California, NBC's Kristen Welker has our story tonight.
What makes fifth graders cheer? Would you believe math?
Yes. I'm starting to really like math now.
These kids are learning with the help of Khan Academy in online school.
You got it right. Good job.
Videos that are interactive and fun, explaining difficult concepts in a conversational way.
There was actually an interesting story from the filming of that news story that I think encapsulates kind of the spirit of what we're trying to do. That reporter, she saw one of the fifth graders in the room, this little fifth grader, she was doing trigonometry, basic trigonometry, which is normally 10th, 11th, 12th grade mathematics. And so the reporter's been impressed. She sits down next to the fifth grader and says, do you think this is fifth grade math? And then she got this very mischievous grin on her face, and she goes, no, I think it's sixth grade. It's a very... She's in for a pleasant surprise, I think. But, you know, just the anecdotal, I mean, the kids, honestly, when we started off, they didn't want to go to recess. It became their favorite class. Even kids who didn't like math. But we wanted to see some data. And so this is actually, you know, it wasn't a rigorous study. We kind of just looked at what their achievement scores were. And the most interesting thing, so the fifth grade, it was a traditional Los Altos fifth grade class. Los Altos is a high-performing school district. 96% of them were at grade level or above after doing this, but that wasn't that much above their district average. So, and the thing is, frankly, the fifth grade assessment didn't capture some of the algebra and trigonometry and other things that these students were doing. But what was really fascinating to us was this, which is the data from the seventh grade pilots. Because these seventh grade classes that they did it with weren't the traditional Los Altos demographic. It was, they called it algebra readiness, which is essentially remedial math. A lot of these were students with learning disabilities. A lot of them were students from families that they don't speak English at home. They were kind of from the other side of the railroad track, so to speak. And what we saw, and this was after 6 months, going into the year, 23% were at grade level, 6% were very below basic. And then after this was crazy. I mean, this is just 6 months of this. 41%, so the 6 plus the 35, were now proficient. And what was really, at least for me, mind-blowing was now 6% of this remedial math class was now advanced. They had actually leapfrogged ahead of kids who were not placed in the remedial math class. They were actually, you know, they didn't just go into the normal class, they went to the advanced class after this. And for us, or the teacher, and they did have an amazing teacher, and the district, we just never seen that. Normally when you go to the remedial math class, that's kind of the end of your math career and you just fall further and further behind, but these kids actually leapfrogged. So I'll finish with one, and you know, and we could dig into data more, but the other thing is that the whole curve shifted to the right, or to the, well, depending on what it is. It shifted in the good direction. And you didn't have any students below basic anymore. It was just a broad-based shift. So it wasn't just helping a small number, it was helping them all. But I want to finish with actually not a K through 12 story, but a story of a student who, I mean, it just tells, 99% of it is his own initiative and perseverance. But it just tells you how many, you start to imagine how many people there are who have so much potential, but they just don't have the tool to act on their potential. So I'll leave you with this last video that was literally just sent to us a couple of months ago. And yeah, I'll just let you watch it.
My name is Mark Halberstadt. Growing up, I was really always a C student. I think I was really pretty much always pretty pitiful in school. I don't think I've ever gotten higher than a B plus in any math class ever, particularly. I pretty much thought that the only thing I was good enough to do in college was major in music. And I went off and I got a music degree in saxophone. But I sort of almost felt that it was more I was getting it because I was terrible at everything else. Kind of worked as a saxophone player for a few years. Really what I wanted to do was do electrical engineering. And the last thing that I remember completely not getting was trig identities. So I went to YouTube and I did a search for trig identities, and Khan Academy was the first thing that popped up. Watched a bunch of videos in the trig playlist to kind of get caught up to speed. I watched all the videos in the calculus playlist. I watched all the videos in the physics playlist. Watched a bunch of videos on dividing decimals and even on subtraction by borrowing. I watched a lot of videos on arithmetic. That was in 2007. I did that until the fall of 2010. And in the fall 2010, I took a leap and I decided to go back to school and went to Temple University, majored in electrical engineering, getting a second bachelor's. And keep in mind, I don't think I've ever gotten above a B plus in math classes, and I was really a straight C student growing up. And I just finished this year, first year back in college, I got a 4.0 GPA for the entire year. I got perfect scores on both of my calc final exams and also on my chemistry final exam. I ended calculus, chemistry, both calculus classes, Calc 1 and 2, and chemistry with an average higher than 100%. There are some Khan Academy videos that I probably listen to the same concept over 20 or 30 times. And there is no tutor in the world I could have paid to have sat next to me and repeated the same thing over 20 or 30 times without at least them getting a little bit judgmental, or at least them thinking like, oh, well, this guy really is never going to get this concept and he should just give up. Where the understanding really happened was watching those videos and also working through the Khan Academy software and everything. The impact for me in my life, I really see it growing exponentially over the next 20 or 30 years. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
Yeah, I'm all done. Yeah, we can, yeah.
I think we're going to have a short conversation, and then we want to take questions from the audience. Mm-hmm. So first of all, congratulations. It's a remarkable story.
Oh,
it really
thank you.
Is a remarkable story. Thank you. And I thought I might just tell you a little story. So I'm on the board of Summit Prep,
yep.
which is in Silicon Valley. It's a public school charter high school. And they have four schools, two that teach in the more traditional manner, and they've had terrific results, and two that opened this fall with a blended learning model. And what they mean by that is they have the regular teacher, but they have Khan Academy. And the results in one quarter of the year that is now gone by already, can you believe one quarter of the school year has gone by already? The results are absolutely remarkable.
Oh, that's good.
In the control schools, yeah. they have 0% of the kids at 80% of grade level and above. Yeah. And in their Khan Academy blended learning model, they have 30%.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That's good to hear.
So it's quite a remarkable story.
Yeah, it's exciting.
But let me ask you a couple of personal questions. So are you still the only one who does these YouTube videos?
I was until Wednesday. We actually brought on. Things are happening fast. So it was an open question. You know, is Sal going to be the only faculty member of this? And we found these two art historians who are doing some tremendous art history videos. And I called them up. I was like, do you want to be the art history faculty? We think we can help support you. And so they've signed on. And one was the head of art history at the Pratt Institute, and one was the head of education at the MoMA in New York. And now they've now there are art history videos on the Khan Academy. So
it's pretty remarkable.
And then there's another woman who's coming on to kind of help out with the math soon. So
So it is also true that you did these videos in your closet?
Yes, I think the first 1,500 or so were done in the closet. That was the, yes. Now I have
was
a very
Was that sort
spacious.
Of a comforting thing for you to do it in the closet?
No, it was, the only part, it was actually the part, my son was born 2.5 years ago, and so when I quit my job, he was there. And so it was the point in the house that was furthest from his crying. And, literally, there was like, I counted the walls and doors, and that was the only way I could record something. Yeah.
So what are you thinking about now? Obviously, you'll continue to do videos. You'll continue to be a core faculty member. And it is sort of remarkable to me that you could do all these videos on all these different subjects. Like, just as an aside, how do you know everything about physics and chemistry and algebra and...
No, my wife will tell you I have the unique ability to pretend like I have authority on things that I maybe should not. But
sort of like politicians. You just assert.
No, you know, I think I started off with stuff that I knew well. And you know, I will say though, it's actually when people are surprised. Wait, you remember your math? Like you know, I was like, what's so shocking about that? We're trying to teach it to every kid. You know, we have them taking 12 years of math, and then they go to college. And it's a sad state when we're actually surprised to find someone who actually learned something going through that. But math and science were my strong suits. That's where I started. There's also a lot of finance videos. Actually, one of the inflection points of Khan Academy was during the financial crisis. I started making videos on credit default swaps and the rest, and actually had some news reporters saying that they were watching the videos before reporting on the. Actually, I had one banker from I won't name the bank, but he sent me an email. He said, I now know what I'm doing at my work. You know, it's better late than never, right?
You sure you don't want to give us the name of the bank so we can short the stock?
There would be lawsuits if I did. Yes.
So, I know that it's still so recent and so young, but what do you see kind of happening over the next couple of years? You now have funding.
Yep.
A lot of funding?
We have a reasonable bit, enough, you know.
You could use more?
We could always use more, and we have some interesting projects that I'm happy to talk about people with. But, you know, what we're doing is I mentioned we're K through 12, the exercises, these pilots we're doing, summits one of them. And our goal with the pilots, you know, we're a small organization. We're not gonna be able to deploy it to every school in the country or the world, or even do the whole politics of how do you navigate that. But what we want to do is show that it works. Not just in Los Altos, not just for fifth graders or seventh graders, but at Summit Prep. You know, there's a pilot in Los Angeles, the Marlboro Academy, which is a high-end girls school in Los Angeles. And we told them, look, you know, we want to do it, you know, maybe this demographic will get some flack if we do it, but we'll be willing to pilot with you if you really push the limits. And so because every student's working at their own pace, they now have this reality, and it's amazing. We visited it. Seventh through 12th grade girls in the same classroom. Teaching each other and learning from each other. Because once you have everyone learning at their own pace, it completely breaks all barriers. Instead of one teacher and 20 students in each room siloed, why not two teachers and 40 students? Three teachers and 60 students? You can start, why separate by age group? Why separate by subject? So the pilots are really to see what we can do with this, how it might work in different form factors. But at the end of the day, most of the 3.5 million students using us right now are they're homeschoolers or people using it as a complement, whatever. We're just trying to make that experience as deep as possible. Add more content, go into beyond calculus, physics, biology, chemistry. We're actually going to have exercises for art history and history. We're going to have computer science is something we want to tackle. I mean, people talk about project-based learning in math. That's computer science.
Sure.
But it's completely absent from the school system right now. So we're just going to keep building on that. I think what will be very exciting over the next 5 to 10 years is... And I've told this, you know, a lot of people, there's this whole structural unemployment issue and, you know, the $1 trillion in student debt. What we'd like to see is a reality where we decouple the credentialing from the learning. Because what happens then is the credential then becomes a universal signal. Because right now you could go to the community college and learn it as well as the Harvard grad, but no one's going to pay the proper, no one's going to know what you learned.
Right.
But if you have a universal credential, now they will, and the credential, I mean, I was talking to a university president, I was like, if someone asks you what you're charging for, $30,000 a year, whatever it is, say, look at this experience, the professors, the facilities, this is a learning experience. But if you ask the students and the parents, what are you charging for? They'll say the credential.
Right.
And so this major transaction, significant part of GDP, is two people transacting over something that's different. And so we say make the credential better, and then what that does is, then it makes the learning part of it an open playing field. So Khan Academy can compete with community colleges, can compete with universities, with high schools, with learning on the job, with the apprentice model. And I think something like that will just blow open everything.
It's interesting. Now, have you thought about how you could teach writing?
Writing, it's interesting. So anything that's right now being done in a lecture mode, we think can be done better with on-demand video, but writing obviously, writing's not that different than computer science.
Yeah.
It's hands-on, you need experience, not quite our exact form factor. I think our form factor right now could do grammar and vocabulary, but that's not writing. I could envision in the next 3, 4, 5 years, and this actually could be one of the interesting projects that we could do, is we give students writing projects, they do it on our site, they build a portfolio on our site, and the powerful part is peer-to-peer critical analysis.
Right.
And you do that, now all of a sudden you're not just catering to one English teacher and who may or may not agree with your style, you get mass audience. And any of us knows, when you know that other people are going to read your work, it just changes how you look
everything.
At it. Exactly.
Well, I think you also potentially get teachers from around the country who, just out of the goodness of their heart, think that this is interesting to help kids.
Exactly.
It's almost a Wikipedia of writing.
Exactly. Wikipedia, and it's not something that we've implemented yet, but right now we've talked about it. The classroom kids are teaching each other.
Right.
It could be everyone. You could have cloud tutors where, hey, I'm at my desk every day, I have lunch from this time to this time.
I'll read an essay.
If there's a kid who needs help, I'm there. It'll just show up, and you use Skype or Google Plus or whatever use, and you can set that up. So I think that's going to happen over the next 5 years.
Well, I think you could also find people who are in the next sort of stage of their career.
Yes.
Maybe they're 55 and they're interested in doing something else, and they could be helpful too.
No, absolutely. There's actually an experiment. I think it's in England. They already did. They call it Cloud Grandmother.
Is that right?
Where you literally they had all these grandmothers that signed up, and if you just want to chat, or I don't know what it was, but if you want a nice grandmother, sometimes you just want a different one. You get a.
Well, I think you're fabulous.
Oh,
and
I think you're fabulous.
You're,
as well,
thank you. And
thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.